Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy, and you're listening to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast,
where we help you become a family who lives, loves, and leads well. Hello and welcome. We are excited today to bring to you an incredible couple, dear friends of ours.
I'm really excited.
Matthew and Bethany Williams, who lead a nonprofit ministry organization called Exile International. And we are super excited to have them on today. Christy and I, we serve on the board of Exile International.
We are honored to.
We are super honored, and it's an incredible privilege with this ministry. And so today...
So we don't just like them, like we kind of love them.
Yeah.
Like, and not just as like amazing leaders and world changers, but as people. These are our people.
Come on, guys. I'm starting to blush here.
I know. You should.
I'm crying.
Like, I think we, might lead your fan club.
Yeah,
I'm sure we have some competition, but I really feel like we're heads of your fan club.
And we
for
know
sure.
You're going to absolutely love them, too. So I want to start by just introducing Matthew and Bethany, and I'm going to start with this question is, what is Exile International? What is it that we're talking about today?
Well, first, I want to make sure the listeners understand what a child soldier is. And because if I tell you what we do and you don't know that, then it's not going to make sense. So if you've never heard the term child soldier, think a child, literally your sixth grader. That's the average age of a child that we work with, a sixth grader who someone has stolen from their mother and father. Like Judith. Judith would be a great example. When she was 9 years old, that's the average age of a fourth grader, I think.
Wow.
She was stolen from her home and her mother killed in front of her, a machete placed in her hand, and she was forced to participate in the murder of her own mother. And then for the next 3 or 4 years, she would be with that rebel army and be forced to kill and to maim countless other times. And those children just like Judith, are the reason Exile exists. And Exile exists to restore rescued child soldiers, children just like Judith, and children orphaned by war through art therapy and holistic rehabilitative care programs that are truly restoring the wounds that they carry, but then also providing empowerment through education and leadership development so that they can not only be healed, but begin to thrive again. And so they'll have those things that mother that's no longer there for Judith, so that they'll have that opportunity to be empowered. So in some ways, Beth and I often say the organization gets to be, and the men and women who serve get to be that mom and that dad that child lost when they were younger.
Mm-hmm. And this is primarily in Congo and Uganda.
Correct.
Yeah. And so, Bethany, I'm going to jump over here to you because...
Yeah.
This organization really was birthed out of what God was doing in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matthew came along, which was an amazing blessing. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget meeting Matthew for the first time.
I remember exactly where we were.
I remember exactly where we were. And we were eyeing him up and down and just going.
You were like,
I felt a little pressure.
Cute.
Yeah. We were, well, and
Josh,
and,
did you think I was kind of cute?
Why
not?
Hey, no pressure.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, with what we do and even going back to the purpose of this podcast, really getting behind the scenes of leaders and families who are loving God and loving others well and what makes them tick. And so, you know, this was birthed out of your own heart. And so tell us a little bit about that as we dive in here.
Yeah. So it started actually in 2008. I was recovering actually from some trauma personally, but it had kind of gotten on the other side of that and was doing so much better. Had a private practice. I was full time. And then I went to a war zone and went to Congo for the first time.
Wow.
Helped lead a trauma care workshop there. And it was there that I met child soldiers for the first time and met kids who were so traumatized that they couldn't speak because of what they had seen. And I think because of my history with PTSD, I connected with them at a heart level, and I wanted so desperately for people to know their stories and for them to feel like someone believed in them and someone saw them. And so came back to the States. I was there for a week or so was devastated, didn't really leave my room for a couple of days because I knew something had to be done. I didn't know what that was, mm-hmm. but I knew doing nothing wasn't an option for me. Mm-hmm. So started the organization literally 2 weeks after I got back.
Wow.
Yeah, and God had put the word exile on my heart because I realized these kids are living in exile. They run and run and run from the rebels. And when they try to go back to their villages after they have escaped or after they've been rescued, their village ostracizes them and they don't welcome them in just because they've been forced to kill. And so they often become street children or they go back to the rebel army because it's really the only family that they know. So,
it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking even when I'm hearing you speak, though. It would have taken God a story that he's been working in you and the hard stuff that you'd walked through for you to be able to sit with a child like that and relate when the rest of us would probably just look on in shock and disbelief and with no hope or even not understanding or not trying to understand what that child's walked through.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's just too much for our brains. Mm-hmm. It's just too unknown for
mm-hmm.
us.
Yeah, I think I knew what a flashback was and I knew what it felt like to have a nightmare. And so even though their trauma was massive compared to any trauma that I went through, I think that little piece connected us.
Yeah.
And, you know, my background is counseling. And so I really wanted to see their hearts whole and for them to know Jesus and to know the healer of their soul, and was on a mission. People really thought I was crazy because I just wanted to stand up on every housetop and say to the world, do you know what is going on? Do you know these kids are being abducted? Do you understand what's really happening? And so that passion led me and really some unhealthy patterns of working all hours. And
yes,
we get that,
and we
I'm
wanna,
sure
we
want to
talk yeah. about that though. Mm-hmm. That's what's
and so if
huge.
You want to because Exile International is an amazing ministry, and one of the reasons that we have two of the reasons primarily that we have joined with Bethany Matthew with Exile International is number one, because we believe in the organization, we believe in what they are called to do, and we believe in their hearts and yeah. the way that they're going after these children. And even from a perspective of what this podcast is all about is we genuinely want to raise our own children. We live here in America. We live here in a, describe it as an entitlement culture, a me, very individualistic culture. And we even think about our own issues and not to minimize anybody's pain, because I never want to do that. Everybody, every single one of us has pain. And I never want to trivialize the meaning of somebody else's pain or even the meaning of your pain and what you're experiencing right now. And however, for our kids, for the most part, at least at this point, the problems our kids have are nothing compared to what these children have mm-hmm. Over in Congo and Uganda. And so we want to be able to be raising our children in such a way that we expose them to what happens in the world
yeah.
and to show them a God who
that's
is
bigger
just,
that's than
way
all of
bigger
that.
Than mm-hmm. all of that.
And I think that's what we've loved so much about you guys too, because what you do is so heavy. It is so, it carries such deep darkness and weight to it that I what I'm amazed by continually is whenever we talk about it, it's you guys see the hope. You see mm-hmm. the light. You don't speak as ones who are overwhelmed, which it sounds like it might have been coming back that first time, mm-hmm. just wanting to scream it from the rooftops, wanting to just beat your fists on the table. Mm-hmm. Why is no one doing anything? And even though I'm sure you still feel that, I think we feel that for you too, as you know, being on the board. Why don't people know about this? Why aren't more people doing something? But I feel like you guys have gotten to a really healthy place, actually, of being such strong advocates for these kids, but also being able to come back to America after your trips to Africa and go Christmas caroling or go to, you know, the mall or something like,
yeah.
you know, how do you
balance
that?
It took a while to get there.
Yeah.
I would say for the first several years, actually for me, mm-hmm. I would come back and I would call it the post third world funk. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of go into this little bit of a depression when I came back. And, but the more I realized, the more this whole lifestyle for us became normal and going into war zones and coming back to America became kind of our life, the adjustment was easier. And I also remember asking one of my dear mentor friends how she did it, because she had kind of lived a similar life. And she specifically said, I choose to live in the hope.
Wow.
I choose to live in that place. And ever since then, it just turned a corner. My mind kind of turned a corner, and I thought, oh yeah, like that's what we're doing. That's the purpose of exile, is to lift up and to give hope in dark places. And so, and Matthew, you kind of model that really well too.
Well, I think two answers that come to mind when people say, well, how do you process that? How do you do it? And I would say number one is we don't have a choice. I mean, we have seen, and therefore I feel we have no choice. Yes is the only answer. So that's how we get to keep moving forward. But how to maintain hope? Well, that really comes from these children and Christ. I do think it might be difficult, borderline impossible, if we did not see the progress that these children were making, if we did not see that their lives are being restored. So to see that and to see the hope come back into their eyes gives us hope. So when we meet a child who's new to the program and they are, you hear their story and it is distressing, it is terrible. Yet I know Baraka, who was once where he was a few years ago, and I see the life that he is living now as a graduate of a program who's now living for others. And he's, and that young man I just mentioned, Baraka, as a graduate of the program, he started his own care program and is now caring for 85 rescue child soldiers,
that's amazing.
And so that's how I maintain hope, is really, I do believe, supernaturally Christ has blessed us with that. And he's also blessed us with opportunities to see graduates and see those that are still transitioning, but those positive steps forward that they're taking.
That's amazing.
Matthew and Bethany Williams from Exile International. And if you want to read more about their story and this journey through Exile International, I would highly, highly recommend you look up the book Color of Grace. It tells Bethany's story. It tells the entire journey of Exile International, and if you're listening to the podcast, and you lead a nonprofit organization, you lead a business, or you lead in any way in any type of capacity, especially if you lead with your spouse, because these two, they, you guys, you lead together, and I think today that's one of the cool things about this podcast is how can we reach out to those of you who are working together, you're serving together in ministry, what does that look like? Or even if you're not serving together in ministry, but you, one of you is a part of a nonprofit or you're part of ministry, how do we balance this, you know, from behind the scenes, behind the four walls?
Because
everything looks good. You know, we talked about all the, you know, the awesome things about what Exile's doing from a public perspective.
Yes.
But now let's open up the door to Matthew and Bethany's house.
Yeah.
And let's walk in that front door.
You're going to see our kitty, first
of all. I love that you've got a cat.
Therapy cat.
That's one of our... Can you convince Josh to let us get a therapy cat? I want a cat.
Come over
so
and hang out with Chipotle sometime.
You're really going to be a lot of convincing. You might have to drug me.
He's been on me for, I don't know, a few months about a dog. But they require so much more work.
Our kids are still young, so I mean, we barely keep two kids alive. Yeah. I don't know how we'd be able
cats
to manage
cats keep themselves alive. They bathe them. You don't even have to bathe them, so that's good. I mean, you have to bathe kids.
That is amazing.
And if it makes you, if you kind of like puppies, our cat is kind of like a puppy. So come over. She'll follow you around. She'll fetch. So it'll
she'll
be good
fetch?
Fun.
Yeah, she
oh,
fetches.
Totally.
Matthew taught her to fetch.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. How do you guys, so behind the scenes, and I know you guys deal a lot with, even you talked about working a lot, working around the clock, you know, and we get that. And it's easy to do that, especially when you lead the organization, right? And you're the leader because you see everything that needs to be done. And you know, there's never, it's not like you're working 9 to 5 in this position and you can leave your work and it's done. It's always there. How do you two, at least in the middle of all of that, especially because you both lead, one of you is director of operations, the other one's executive director, how do you guys, behind the scenes, reconnect at a heart level?
That's a great question. I think we're figuring that out to a certain degree, and we've had to set some pretty clear boundaries.
And then recommit to them.
And
pretty
recommit
regularly.
To them yeah. on a daily basis. Yeah. Because what's interesting about this dynamic is that we're both visionaries, we're both passionate, we're both assertive. Like, you don't have a follower and a leader in this thing. Mm. We're both opinionated, and so we've really had to learn to die to ourselves and to love like Jesus and to lead like Jesus. And so for me, what I've learned is that that's a constant building up of Matthew, which I'm still learning how to do well. And it's easy.
What is one way he likes to be built up?
Words of affirmation, for sure. Yeah. Would you say, Matthew?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to speak for you.
Yeah. And actually, I brought something to share with you because Beth has learned a lot about my particular love language, which is a four-letter word. Don't let your minds run away from you.
Do you want me to explain what the love language is?
He's literally
not yet
getting in.
Are
his
he's
bag.
Getting into his bag right now, and I'm.
So.
Is that?
So
can I describe that, what's happening?
Or yes,
yeah,
you
yeah,
can describe
totally.
What's happening.
Okay. I've got extras.
So Matthew's love language
that is awesome
is play, and so. And if you know us, you know we laugh a lot. I laugh obnoxiously loud, actually.
It is the best laugh.
Oh, it's kind of obnoxious.
No.
So when things get too tense, which
not.
Unfortunately you can't see us right now, but I just pulled two Nerf pistols out of my bag. And so when things get a little too tense, oh my gosh.
We're shooting
right through the heart. When things get a little too tense, one of us reaches in that drawer we keep in the living room. They're always there. So if things are a little too tense,
really?
It just breaks the tension immediately. And then instantly we go from too serious to running around the house, shooting each other, diving to grab another because they're single shot, grab another Nerf dart, and you know, and yeah,
that
so it's 10 minutes and then we're reconnected.
Awesome.
Well, I will say Matthew that usually is the instigator, which is great because I'm like head down to-do list.
Yes,
and
you are.
Actually got really sick this summer after we got back from a trip, and later found out that I almost died when I was in the hospital.
You were really
so that recovery
sick.
Process at home was long and tedious, and there was one day, and still trying to work and do Exile stuff and run the organization, and yeah, there was one day that Matthew came home and I wasn't even walking well at that point, and he pulled out the Nerf gun pistol and started shooting
it. I could tell.
And I like holding on to things around the house so I wouldn't fall down, but I am shooting back at him.
Yeah.
There's no
awesome.
Way he's shooting at me and I'm not shooting back at him.
That is one of the best ideas I have heard.
I love it.
I highly recommend every married couple own at
guns.
Least one set of Nerf guns, if not multiple.
Have you heard ever Josh talk about his recommendation for marriage therapy?
I have a therapist friend who was counseling a couple, and he said they weren't, he was meeting with them in session and there was no major issues. There wasn't any, you know, there was no deep underlying issues going on. They just weren't having fun. And so what he said, I gave him a homework assignment, and he said, I told him to go home and get water guns. This was water guns, not Nerf guns. I flipped this because unless you want to clean up water around your house, it's not the greatest idea, but Nerf guns work really well. He said, go home and get water guns and
close the blinds.
And close the blinds. And I said, well, why did you tell him to close the blinds? He said, because I told him to get into a water gun fight naked.
and
he
awesome.
Said, he said they called and they never had another appointment after that. They learned
that
to start
so
having
good.
Fun together. So, I love this idea because when you're doing heavy, deep work or you're leading an organization or you're even just trying to,
get through everyday life.
Right.
Staying married well and doing marriage well, because Christy and I mean, you can attest to this, especially for me. We're serious.
Yeah.
Me especially. I take life way too seriously.
You do.
And I do need to laugh more.
You do.
And so implementing this is a really good way to
do that. Well, I think there's so many of us, the weight of life, we just get on that treadmill and we just keep going and we bury our heads down, and with kids or work and scheduling and the pace, I think, of life, has picked up to such an extent that we don't look around and we don't have fun anymore. Mm-hmm. We almost forget that is a part of life that's okay.
Yeah.
And not just okay. It's something that
necessary. It's like a survival skill.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
And I know you guys well enough to know this too. And so I'm going to ask this question, and it's kind of an open-ended question. So I don't care which one of you takes it, but we talked about seeing the hope, I think is crucial. Number two, laughing and having fun, Nerf guns. Make sure you get a set of Nerf guns. And number three, you guys work a lot. We work a lot. We talk about work. And it seems like when we get together to do heart level conversation, as families, we talk about the power of rest. And I know you guys just recently had a sabbatical. Talk to us a little bit about, even in the, especially in 21st century America, with constant social media, constant just messages being sent our way. And then, you know, apart from that, if you have children, you're dealing with trying to get the kids out the door and you're dealing with a lot. Talk to us a little bit about what you have found and what you have learned over these past couple months as it relates to rest, even in the context of your marriage and then also leading your organization.
Well, number one, we definitely don't have it figured out yet, which I think y'all know that. Make sure everyone else does. And just make sure you know that we know we don't. But then thankfully we had some great mentors in our life that really spoke of the importance of, one, Sabbath, so that regular weekly rest. But then also, especially after Bethany had been so very, very sick and hospitalized and just, she, for her physical and mental health, really needed that, or needed a sabbatical. And at first I was like, okay, yeah, one of us will. But they looked, I remember one mentor in particular that we just trust so much from her years and years of wisdom in the nonprofit world and leading, was like, no, but you both need to do this. Mm-hmm. You both need this, and it will be one of the best things you could do for your marriage. And it was. So we spent a month completely unplugged. We even bought what I call burner phones. We bought $10 phones from Target.
Love this.
And this was Matthew's genius idea.
So no smartphones. So dumb phone that does nothing other than text and call.
You're speaking my love language.
Oh, it was so good. Man, highly recommend that as well. And
that was probably the best part of our sabbatical. And we weren't completely unplugged, but we had that opportunity to be unplugged when we needed to be.
Yeah. We had our other phones. We didn't disconnect them, but we were intentional about not taking them with us a lot of the time or spending the day out with just the, you know, so-called burner phones. And, you know, our parents had the numbers, our couple best friends had the number, but that's about it. And so it was just great to really feel unplugged, because even if you're off this day and age, you're constantly carrying work with you via your smartphone, or at least for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And for Beth and I, because that's our emails, like point of contact from numerous countries reaching out to us. And so even if I'm off, I feel that addiction. Maybe. And I got to pick it up. I got to check it.
100%.
And I mean, I'll be checking and responding to email before I even realize what I'm doing. And I recognize I'm not getting that rest I need.
Yeah.
We're not designed. We are designed as finite creatures. God is the only infinite one.
What is that? Wow. What is a Sabbath look like in your marriage? Like, do you guys hold each other accountable to that? Do you guys?
We have to.
And what does that look like? I know for us, one of the things that we do from Saturday sundown to Sunday sundown is we turn off social media. Like we just don't and we keep off our screens except for maybe Skyping with our family or something because they're not close nearby. But beyond that, that's one of the ways that we shut down from Saturday sundown to Sunday sundown. How does that look like for you guys? Do you guys keep each other accountable to certain things like that?
That's when we kind of have a goal list. And so one of those is taking at least one Sabbath every week. So let's say we're speaking somewhere on a Sunday, that's work. So that means we need to make sure maybe on that Saturday or somewhere else during the week that we're taking time off. Really just to let God fill you up. Because one thing I've really realized over the past year or so is that if you give out from a dry place, it can be traumatic, truly.
Wow.
And so it's so important to fill up in order to give out. And so that's something I keep in my head all the time, to fill up, to give out.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And when you're filling up on Jesus, when you're filling up on God, and of course, he's the only being the only one that can truly fill us to the degree that we need to be, then you're giving out of Jesus.
Well, and there's times too that I will in the evenings, as a form of quote unquote rest, get on my cell phone, and I'm looking at whether it's ESPN or, you know, or just scrolling through the news, or I rarely get on Facebook, but if I get on Facebook or whatever, the next thing I know, an hour goes by and I'm quote unquote resting. Even after I get up after that 45 minutes or so or an hour, I don't feel rested.
No. Mm-hmm.
There's a different type of rest.
Yeah. Because we're not letting our brains rest.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
If we're vegging out really on Netflix or even on social media or our phone, our brain isn't resting. And so on our sabbatical, there was a book that we got called 40 Days to a Closer Walk with God. And it talked a lot about centering prayer. Mm. And so every day we would read that together or individually, depending on the day. And we would have at least 10 minutes for centering prayer. And centering prayer is basically resting in the presence of God. You don't have to have words. You don't have to try to come up with something to say. You literally rest in the presence of God and allow His Spirit to kind of nurture yours. And it was a beautiful practice that I don't think if we didn't take the sabbatical, I don't think we would have really learned to do that.
Yeah, it's something that you've practiced on and off over the years since I've known you, and it's never made sense to me. But thankfully, this book broke it down really well, and I wish I knew the author's name so we could plug him right now, but it's a difficult last name.
I want to get that book.
Yeah, Centering Prayer. Yeah. What's the title of it?
It's 40 Days to a Closer Walk with God, and then the subtitle is basically, you know, learning about centering prayer. It's kind of the subtitle. It's fantastic, but for me, it was a guy with a similar background to me, with a seminary background, an academic background, that probably a similar church background. He kind of walked through how he came to understand centering prayer as a new practice for him. And I felt like I kind of got to walk that journey with him, and it began to make sense. And at first, I thought it encourages you every time to spend 20 minutes in silence, just being in the presence of God. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to be still for 20 minutes. I haven't done that how old am I? Since I was born.
Yeah.
But I found myself within 2 days going, 20 minutes isn't enough. I think because I going into sabbatical, we were at a place
so
where
depleted.
We really depleted. Yeah. And I realized how good it was, and how not just how much I needed it, but how much I enjoyed it. Yeah. I fell in love with it.
Well, and I think we realized how addicted we were to our phones, too.
Oh, yeah. And, and then, as Josh, you were saying before about using your phone at night to veg out, we also have to recognize how stimulating any screen time is, no matter what that is.
Yeah.
You know better than I about the science of that.
Yeah. You know, as we talk about this, you may be listening to this conversation and saying, man, this is so good. I told you you would love these two. I mean, they are so intentional.
I wish you could like, listen to them for hours.
I'm
glad you don't have to.
They are so intentional about seeking the Lord, and that is what I love about this couple in particular. They seek the Lord,
and they seek out people.
And they seek out people.
That's what I see in you. You seek out us as friends. You seek out those kids, but you're so intentional in relationships, and I think that's one other thing we admire so much about you.
And so if you're listening today and you're saying, man, I don't even know if I can get 20 minutes or that kind of thing, start with five. Mm-hmm. Start with five.
I spent 5 minutes doing that this morning. That's all I felt that I had time. That's all I made time for. And
it's better than
zero.
Start somewhere. And as you listen to us, you understand we are all about no condemnation in Christ Jesus. There's no condemnation in how you lead your family, love your family. But if you start somewhere, and it's just, and that's what it is, it's just taking
that first step,
very first small step, and not beating yourself up. Yeah. Trust me, we're parents, we're married. We know we beat ourselves up enough.
Yeah.
We're not here to do that. We want you to be able to take these small steps and start feeling like you're creating wins for your life and for your family.
Yeah. And I also want to just mention again, Bethany's book, The Color of Grace. I read that book front to cover. Is that how you'd say that, I guess? Cover to cover. Do you remember it was when it first released? Was that
March of 2015?
Yeah, March last year.
I was sick.
Yeah.
And I read it within, I think it was a 24-hour period. I haven't sat down and, I mean, we were parents of really young kids at the time.
Yeah. You were laying in bed with chronic back issues at the time.
Is that what it was?
Yep.
Oh, I thought I was sick.
Yeah.
I could not put it down. Mm. And I cannot say that. I couldn't tell you another book I feel the same way about.
That's
so,
a big compliment.
The Color of Grace.
You need to read it.
Check that out. These guys are amazing, and we love you both. It's an honor to be in your lives, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Yeah, we feel the same way about you guys. This is so fun. We get to be with you, plus we get to do a podcast.
It's
how great
so
is it?
So fun.
It is fun. It's a lot of fun.
Party after.
We got chocolate chip cookies to eat after this, right?
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy.
Be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. Write a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, and questions you may also want us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor walking alongside you.
We'll see you next week.